Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show this week. My guest is actor and singer Sam Kane. He's been on Brookside, Coronation Street, Emmerdale and many other things. He's married to the lovely Linda Lusardi, and the topic is plastic surgery, specifically a problem that Sam had where his upper eyelids were drooping over his eyes to the extent that it was causing him real pain, and it was a real problem, so he went to get some help.
There you go, that's your problem. He said, you're pulling that face all the time, aren't you? And I said, I am. He said, well, you're using muscles that you shouldn't really be using to that extent.
We chatted about the plastic surgery that he had to correct this eye problem and mulled over a few other things and generally put the world to rights. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you.
This show is cool!
I really did enjoy my chat with actor and singer Sam Kane. At the start, I did admit to him that I'd done a little bit of background research.
Right, so I must admit, I did, before our chat, a little bit of electronic stalking. And it turns out, Sam, we've got quite a lot in common. I mean, other than the fact that I'm not an actor or a singer or anything like that. But we both live in Hertfordshire.
Oh, good.
We both have lovely and smart wives. And I always kind of think of myself as essentially punching above my weight when it comes to my partner.
Welcome to my world.
First question's got to be, do you feel the same?
Oh, mate, 100%. Honestly, who was I talking to the other day? I was talking to somebody about Linda, and they said she always comes across as really humble and, you know, not like you would think somebody that looks like her would come across, because sometimes that level of beauty comes with a certain level of arrogance. Linda's the opposite. She's the only person who doesn't see what everybody else sees. And I said, thank God for that, because if she thought she was as beautiful as I think she is, she certainly wouldn't be with me. So I'm very happy for her humility because it benefits me massively. Yeah, she's the most beautiful person I know.
Okay. I think I'm in the same boat, actually. Yeah. So we can both feel a little smug about ourselves. So that's good. But what they both had COVID, so that's something in common, but that's the kind of point where it kind of diverges a little bit. Your wife, Linda, had COVID. But really, it was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It was terrible. We nearly lost her. She was a couple of hours up from being put on a ventilator, which we know the ramifications of that. The chances of survival were so diminished. It was unbelievable. But there was a miraculous turnaround. And within a few days after that point, she was actually out of hospital. And she's like fighting fit again now. And thank God. Yeah, it was a really tumultuous time, to say the least. And I think that was part of the reason that I was affected so much. But we'll get onto that. You know, physically, you know, that kind of trauma and stress really does create a physical impediment.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, actually, this was obviously a very stressful time, which had some direct results to your health.
Well, listen, it's hard to say what it is. But, you know, if you look at anybody that's been through trauma, and it's difficult to say what traumatizes some people because, you know, we're all kind of judgmental. We all look at their situation and go, well, I wouldn't have dealt with it like that, but you didn't have to deal with that. So that's kind of off the table. So, yeah, it was really tough nearly losing my wife because we are incredibly close. And, you know, by proxy, it's even made us closer because it's that thing you do know what you've got, but you don't really know what you've got until it's nearly taken away from you. And it has incredibly, you know, the benefits have been massive. We're so close now. It's unbelievable. But, yeah, it was terrifying, Mike. There's no two ways about it. It was utterly terrifying and a really traumatizing time that, you know, I'm still, I guess, suffering some PTSD from it. And I definitely think it did have an effect on me visually, because I look at me even after COVID, because Linda and I were both in hospital at the same time. So we both went through it. In fact, Linda caught it from me. So I've got that to deal with as well. So, yeah, both.
You were both hospitalized with COVID.
Both of us really close. We were, I mean, another day at home and I wouldn't have survived because I'm asthmatic as well. And the doctor said to me, your oxygen is so depleted, that the ambulance guy, that if we don't take you in, and they nearly didn't take us in, if we don't take you in, you'll be dead in a few hours. So that's how close we were to the mortal line of not being here. So, Yeah, it was a terrifying time. Thank God, whatever it was that intervened, you know, we will be forever in its debt. But it did leave its mark. So yeah. Then I got better quite quickly. But Linda was really, really bad, to the point where a doctor came in and told her that she should contact her closest relatives and her next of kin and basically say, you know, put her things in order. So that was that. It was terrifying. So you can imagine the kind of trauma I went through being so close to my wife and went into meltdown and what have you. And through all of that time as well, work was just a disaster because my industry, entertainment, where I was working, was booking a lot of people on cruise ships and stuff like that. Well, they were completely grounded right the way across the world. And there was no funding for any of us in showbiz, really. Certainly no. What was it called at the time? What was the thing where people got paid with it when working from? What was that called?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I feel like I should know.
It's a word, isn't it, that we never heard of before and we hope we never hear of again. Furlough.
Richie Sunak sorted it all
furlough,
out.
Furlough, it was called.
Furlough, yeah.
We didn't get any of that. There was no loans. There was no benefits. So, and also, you know, I was kind of like screwed over by a really close friend of mine. So it was one thing after another. And I guess all of that stress took its toll to the point of me looking, I'm getting older. I'm in my 50s now and I'm quite happy with what I look like. And 2 years down the line, my God, gravity took its toll. You know, to the point where, Mike, it was really noticeable to me. And not so much within the visual, that's enough in itself, but I can deal with that. You know, you can live with the visual because, you know, you age how you age. And I was quite okay with how I looked. That was just my face and Linda was happy with it. So who am I to argue? But then it took a real turn. And I guess this is a question you've got further down the line. So I'm probably jumping the gun for you a bit.
We're going there naturally anyway. But yeah, I'm sort of stress. We all have it. We can look a bit haggard. But there was sort of one thing in particular which sort of came into the forefront, which was a lot more than just kind of looking not quite your former self, actually really started to affect you.
Yeah. I suffered quite a long time ago with really bad vision and I had my laser surgery, which unequivocally changed my life. And I say that with no drama, not at all. It changed my life to the point where I was walking around for weeks just glaring at stuff with the amazement of vision, because it was like I had cataracts before. My vision was so impaired. But then the thing came in where I would always get headaches from my lack of vision before, because I'm constantly trying to focus on things. So I must have had a default position with my face that happened as my eyelids started to droop. And as I said about the stress and gravity and age and stuff, my eyelids started to drop. I always had hooded eyes, but my eyelids had started to rest on my eyelashes by proxy, closing my eyes. So my vision was being impaired literally by my eyelids. So what I started to do was I started to pull a face where I was in a constant state of amazement. So I'd be doing this, looking around all the time. And I would have this expression on my face. Of, I'm always surprised. Looked like a Muppet, effectively. And it was the detrimental effect it had on me was I would have such terrible headaches to the point of almost migraine. I suffered from migraines. So they weren't quite migraines, but they were debilitating headaches. And I didn't know what it was. Right. And I went to the doctor. Sorry, go on.
Were you wearing glasses for this time?
My eyes are fine now. But the problem, these are just, I would just wear magnifiers, you know, because my closer vision now is deteriorating. Nobody can fix that. That's just an age thing. But my eyes were being closed by my eyelids. My eyelids were literally hanging on my eyelashes. And I was looking at them and there was a point where I couldn't see my eyelashes. And I thought, this is only going to get worse. And I went to see a doctor and he said, well, the problem, you're getting headaches. And he did a few tests. And then he saw me read something and he looked at my, and I did this with my eyes, like I had just described. And he said, there you go. That's your problem. He said, you're pulling that face all the time, aren't you? And I said, I am. He said, well, you're using muscles that you shouldn't really be using to that extent. You're frowning constantly. So it's exacerbating, or whatever the negative connotation of that word is, to a situation that you're creating your own pain. Mm-hmm. So I then went to see a couple of cosmetic surgeons, and Alex just blew the rest out of the water for me, because he just told me exactly what I needed to hear. Not what I wanted to hear, but what I needed to hear about.
So this is cosmetic surgeon Alex Karidis.
Alex Karidis, yeah. Yeah, and he's a brilliant, brilliant man. But there's a whole host of reasons. And the side effects and the benefits rather than the side effects, were beneficial for me, because, you know, you get your former face back. You get that. That's kind of like a given. But now I don't have to take painkillers three times a day.
Sure.
You know, it's just, it's changed my life. And in so many ways that now I look in the mirror, I don't sigh when I look at myself going, oh God. Because don't forget, Mike, I've been in show business all my life and I've been on television. I've headlined theatre shows all over the country, in the West End, all over the world, really. And when you're around towns that your show is playing in, there's a huge poster of whatever the title is. And my face was like 40 foot tall. So I was always seeing myself as good as I could possibly be by a photographer, lighting, makeup, slight manipulation if they use a Photoshop. And, you know, you always see the best version of yourself. So it was almost like a curse.
You know, you're walking.
In fact, I'll tell you a story. My son said to me, I took him on tour with me for a couple of dates. And he said, is your poster everywhere, Dad? Is your face just everywhere? Because obviously you go to the town and your face would be everywhere. Yeah. Is there advertising the show? So he just assumed that was the same the world over. So that was my world. You know, it's the world I lived in, and that's how they sold the shows. But when you get used to looking at that face so often, and then all of a sudden you look in the mirror and this fraggy older version of yourself is looking back, it's not a very happy situation.
So what is this condition called? There's like a, having the droopy eye.
I don't know. I don't think it's a condition. It's just, you know, it's just one's facial structure. You know, what's this? I don't even know what the surgeon, what the procedure is called. Is it blepharitis? Blether something, where they just take some of the skin off your eyelids. Because I'm looking at your eyelids now, Mike, and yours are pretty much. How old are you, if you don't mind me? I should never ask a lady your age. What do you weigh?
No, I'm old. I'm 57.
57. So you've got hooded eyes like I have, but yours haven't gone as bad as me because you obviously haven't had as much stress. Your wife gives you a better time than I got. But so the hooded eyes were really causing me a problem. I don't know what the condition's called because I guess it's just gravity and aging. I guess that's what it is, mixed with a bit of stress and anxiety.
Okay. So, but this is sort of comes about through age, through stress. Are there any other contributory factors that you know of that can potentially help it along its way?
DNA. It's got to be the only thing, you know. Yeah. You're looking back at your parents and your ancestry, and you see you've got a similar facial structure, and that's it.
Okay, so anyway, you met up with a surgeon. What did he do? You know, how did he fix the problem?
Well, you know, you go through a consultation first, and he talks you through exactly what's going to happen, how you're going to feel after it, what, you know, the procedure that you're going to go through, pre, during and post. But what I loved about Alex was, and I do what you do for a living as well, Mike. I interview people. So I'm effectively just a nosy person. I like knowing stuff, you know, and I think being an interviewer, it's a great place to come from because you're constantly curious. And that was what I went to him with, because the procedure and all that kind of thing has never really worried me. I'm always just, I hand myself to somebody because I've done my diligence in the trust that there's only so far I can take the control. Right. And then I have to hand the controls to somebody else, and I'm completely within what the work I've done hopefully comes to fruition. And I've picked the right person. Obviously, that's where I've come through. But he told me about the people that he didn't do any procedures on. And that for me was almost the tipping point of you're the right guy for me. Because I said to him, you look around now and you see guys and girls in their early 20s and they're having procedures done. Now, when you're in your early 20s, or even to mid-30s, you're in your pomp. You're never going to look any better than you look within that 10-year period. Some people are lucky at stretches. Some people, but they are extremes, you know, exceptions to the rule. But you look your best. And if you're fiddling with yourself at that point, it's more than cosmetic. There's got to be something mental. And he was telling me about people that he didn't do surgery on, and it wasn't about, you know, making people look better because they had body dysmorphia or mental health issues. He wants to help people who have just reached a point in their life that it's medically better for them, physically better for them, and it will benefit them for all the right reasons. And the amount of people he turns away, is it overshadows the amount of people he takes on. So that for me was one of the great things. And also he told me all the negative connotations of what could happen. So you go in, no pun intended, with your eyes wide open, you know, and it's a perfect place to be, because you can then make a concerted decision and a really educated decision about the information that's given you. And you can never go back and say, you didn't tell me this, you didn't say this, even to the point, Mike, where they offered me a service of pre-therapy for it, where they wanted to make sure that I was in the right mindset, I was prepared for it. And they went through so many different things. And I was just, to be fair, I kind of put myself through all of those tests prior anyway. to the point where the lady who was doing the therapy said to me, you're like a model patient, really, because you've done all the work and I don't have to, you know, kind of get you in a place where you want to either go forward or make a decision to not. She said, you've made all the decisions, which is, like I said before, I put myself to a position of I need to hand over the controls now. And that also happened after, where they took, you know, they sat me down and had a long conversation with the therapist. And she was just amazing. How do you feel? How was the therapist? What, did they treat you right? Have you got everything in place? We'll be in touch. The pre, during and post care was exceptional, to the point of, like, you know, when you expect things because you're paying for this, what they gave me was way far and above what I expected.
Can you give an example of some of the potential downsides that they give you, you know, to make sure you're going in aware of everything that can possibly go wrong, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's different. Everybody's DNA is different. Everybody's reaction to something is different. You know, you read the side effects on the side of a pill box. You read if this could have adverse effects, if. And, you know, you could be one of those one in however many, because there's never 100%. I mean, if you get 100% perfection on a medical outcome, you are changing the world exponentially. That's never been done in the history of medicine. So there's going to be somebody that's going to react badly. And he tells you that this, you're going under general anesthetic. That in itself is a massive undertaking, because you are literally in the hands of the anaesthetist, who has to control you to the best of their ability. And one would hope, even at the NHS, you're having somebody monitoring you to the best of their ability. But if you're paying for it privately, you'd expect that they, you know, that little bit more. You know, you're paying for the speed, you're paying for the expertise, and you're paying for the best, effectively. So you expect the best, but there's only so much that they can give you. I mean, there's certain examples, like, who's the famous American Jewish comedian, the lady who died under anesthetic having a procedure? Joan Rivers. She's a prime example. She went under anesthetic and didn't come out.
She died under anesthetic? I didn't know that.
Yeah, something happened with her heart and she never survived. She had a rare condition that just didn't bring her out. So there are major things that could go wrong. And he took me through all of those.
Right.
And he said, looking at you, and obviously the man's an educated man, so he knows what he's talking about. He's got enough previous examples to go, okay, best guess is, but here's the possible if it's something goes wrong. And he told me how it would happen. And he was spot on. He was absolutely spot on. Now, I'm guessing there are times where he's not as spot on, but it was Gary Player, wasn't it? It said, someone said, you're really lucky. He said, yeah, the more I practice, the luckier I get. So this is a prime example of that. You know, the more he does it, the better he gets at it.
So take us through, actually, the day you went in. Was it a day visit or a couple of days?
Day visit. I was in and out in a day. Okay. Yeah, it was. You know, when you go in with expectation and you put your ideals of what the situation is going to be, how you expect to be pre, post. I'll be honest with you. I guess I'm a rare individual where I quite like a procedure. I'm happy to lay on a table and hand myself over to people. So in that respect, I was okay. I'm fine with that. Obviously, I've done my work. I've done my diligence. I'm not an idiot. You know, I don't just throw myself to the behest of somebody with a scalpel. You know, I'll do my diligence, which I did. But I was fine with all of that. Hence, excuse me, the therapist telling me that I was a prime example, a perfect example of what she needs to do in the process of her therapy. I went in, chatted to the anaesthetist. She was fine, took a few blood tests prior, and that all happened prior as well. So they were doing due diligence even further. The surgeon came in, Alex Caridis came in, had a look at me, had a chat with me, asked me if I was okay, did a couple of markings on my face, took some photographs pre and post, reassured me everything's going to be fine. We're going to be chatting again in a couple of hours in post-operative. I go into the pre-op. I lay down. I'm having a nice chat with the two ladies in there. One's the nurse. The other one's the anaesthetist. The cannula's already in my hand. She pops the tube into the cannula. She's chatting away. And I said, oh, I can feel, you know, when you start to go, oh, that feels
slightly cold.
Someone just turned the internal heater on. Yeah. And I've gone, oh, that, it was really strange. It was like anesthetic I've never had before. I've been under a few procedures for my eyes and what have you, and other things. And this was really strange. It was a really lovely thing, because I don't normally like anesthetic, but at least it's quick and you're out quickly. This was really quite nice. Anyway, I'm under in seconds. The next thing, I'm awake. I'm in the post-op.
So how long was the procedure? Do you know how long?
About an hour.
All right.
Really easy.
Right. And I wake up. in the terms of the layman, what they actually do. You know, they've got his scalpel in his hand. What's he doing? Is he taking bits off or cutting muscle, or what's he up to?
No, there's no muscle involved here. Well, what I had done as well was I had, like, you know, it looked like I was smuggling turkeys under my neck. I sang a lot in my career, Mike. So when you're singing, all of this expands, and I don't have a very wide jawline. You know, I've got a very narrow face. So there's no infrastructure. There's no scaffolding to hold all of this up, you know? So it's all just, so I started to get this because these muscles on my neck were constantly being expanded. So when you stop singing, you're not using those muscles anywhere. So something's got to give, right? Like any muscle you don't use, it's, you know, it depletes very quickly. And so
I still sing in the shower, though. Keep those muscles.
Oh God, yeah, I still sing, but not as a profession. COVID put an end to that. But I started to notice that this was hanging down. And I spoke to Alex and I said, look, is there anything you can do with this while I'm under? And he said, yeah, that'll be sorted very, really quickly. A little bit of liposuction, get rid of the fat, the skin will nestle back up and everything will be gone. And it's given me my jawline back, which is great because my head just went, I was like Beaker from the Muppets. It was just one extent down to my chest. So that again.
I can only count one chin because I can only see one chin, which is always a good sign.
And that was just almost like a little side offering, you know, that obviously, you know, you pay for and it's part of the procedure. But again, it's such a small procedure and so easy that it was done in a couple of hours. So the only discomfort that I had was a bandage that was basically holding the skin under my chin back to where it should be. So I had a 360 bandage from the top of my head to under my chin.
But back to the eyes, we got a bit distracted. What actually happened in the eye area?
They basically cut the skin off that was hanging down. So what they do, they cut into, you know, where your eye socket is. So if you were to put your finger to follow the sphere of your eye, where that meets at the back, where your skin, where you can't push back any further. You see the way my eyelid, there's a line between my eyelid and my eyeball, my eyelid hanging over my eyeball.
I can see.
They cut that. So the scar literally sticks right in the socket. So you can't see it.
Right. Okay.
And this happened on the 19th of December and my scar is almost invisible.
Excellent. All right. So you were a couple of hours under.
Yeah.
You went home the same day.
Yeah.
What about recovery? Did you have to do anything special to make sure, you know, you didn't wreck it? Or did you have
nothing extraordinary. And even with that, you know, I give myself I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. So I thought to myself, I've had kidney stones. Anyone who's had kidney stones know. Now, let me tell you this. Let me tell you, I digress a little. I went to the doctor with kidney stones, and I feel like I've got quite a high pain threshold. I am a man, and I know women will be listening to this going, you're a bloke. Who do you think you're talking about? But I know I've got quite a high pain threshold. Trust me, I'm in show business. You have to take a lot mentally and physically. I said to him, this is really painful, to the point where I passed out with the pain with kidney stones. Am I over-egging this? Am I being dramatic? He said, no. And his explanation, not mine, he said, I've had women who have had kidney stones and given birth. Everyone that's given birth and had this kidney stone said they would rather give birth. I'm not saying it's worse than childbirth. The doctor said it's worse than childbirth. And I'm sure there are exceptions. So this was that bad. I was passing out with pain. So I know what pain is. Anyone that's had kidney stones can attest to my knowledge of pain. So I came in with the ideal of, okay, I know what 10 is. I'm expecting somewhere between 4 and 6 discomfort and pain afterwards, post-operative.
Okay.
Mike, I've got no reason to say this. I've got no bias in this. I had zero pain. Even to the point where my first day I came home and I thought, okay, I've still got the anesthetic in me. I better take a painkiller just in case when that wears off, I'm going to be in pain. The next day I woke up, I had no pain. Zero pain. And I kept waiting for it to happen. Nothing happened. It was the easiest thing. And within 24 hours, I get my mojo back and I don't have headaches. It's life-changing. Brilliant. It's life-changing.
So here's a question for you, because the procedure you had done, it wasn't cosmetic. You know, you needed it. You were suffering. Is it possible to get such a procedure on the NHS?
I think you can get pretty much most procedures on the NHS. The difference is, how long are you willing to wait?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the key to it. And I didn't want to wait, because if you've had a headache and you're taking painkillers, your body starts to get some kind of, you know, deterrent. It creates its own deterrent to the way they work. It's the way the body works. So they just stop working. So therefore, you have to then take bigger painkillers. And before you know it, you're turning into a drug addict and you need these painkillers just to function through the day. And I'm not saying I was anywhere near that point, but I didn't want to get myself to a point of being just in total need of a drug. It's something I've never been privy to or never been in a situation of. I'm not an addictive person, so I don't want to put myself in that situation of being that addictive person. So I thought, what's the quickest way from A to B? Can I afford it? Yes, I can. Can I get it done quicker than waiting on the NHS? Will they do it on the NHS? Is it a big enough thing? My guess is, going back to the kidney stones, I had kidney stones trapped for 3 weeks that wouldn't fit through my kidney, through this tiny stem between my kidney and my bladder, because they were too big. And their whole ethos, these little things, is to get out, and your body forces them out. And that tube between your kidney and your bladder has a muscle in it, and that's where the pain is caused, because it tries to force any alien body out of itself. It's what the body does.
For 3 weeks you were suffering this.
Oh, it'll pass. It'll pass. This thing had, it was like, honestly, it was like Gandalf, you shall not pass. It was just not going anywhere, this thing. And I am on the floor 25 times a day, every day, with pain. I'll tell you how bad it was. I'm putting morphine suppositories into my body to take the pain away. You know you're in a bad way when you're shoving things where they don't belong.
So what happened? Did you wee it out in the end? Were you peeing and then...
No, I had to have an operation. I had to pay privately to have an operation. They told me that I would have to wait 6 to 12 months to have an operation. And I said, what if I do it privately? He said, you can have it done tomorrow. I said, is it the same surgeon? They said, yeah. I said, well, if I don't take appointment privately and he's not doing anything, he's free tomorrow then, isn't he? They said, it doesn't work like that. So he would have been swinging the lead for that hour that he took them out, but I paid him. All of a sudden that hour's taken up.
Yeah, it's there is something wrong with the system there, actually.
It's disgraceful. It? Yeah, it's disgraceful, but there you go. So it was either put up with the pain, wait for it to pass, but I had to have an emergency surgery that was really quite, like I said before, I've had procedures. That was one of them. That wasn't a happy procedure at all. My God, at the time, I thought, I'll look back at this and laugh, and I do, but at the time, it was
so was that like a keyhole? We're getting off topic a bit here, but was that a keyhole surgery, or did they kind of...
No, they go in through... There's only one access, unless they cut you, and that's through the front entrance, and it's not, you know, it's hardly accessible, is it?
No, that kind of brings tears to your eyes.
Yeah, thankfully, again, you're under, you know, even pulling the catheter out, it's just... I think about it now and I shudder at the thought of it. The hairs on my arms are sticking on. It wasn't a happy place. I don't want to go into detail about that.
All right, we'll park that, put that to one side. We can go into details of that when we chat next time, if you like.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that on another occasion.
But as far as kind of cosmetic procedures, I think something interesting to just touch on and get across is that a lot of cosmetic procedures or plastic surgery is not necessarily about how you look. It really matters because it's causing serious pain. You know, you couldn't function really as in your normal life. So and it's the idea that a lot of people have that actually plastic surgery is for rich bored people to make themselves look a bit better is not necessarily the case at all.
But don't you find, Mike, that when we're all judgmental human beings, and if anybody says
very judgmental, I apologize.
Well, I'm the same. I think everybody's the same. You know what it's like. People say, what's your favorite thing when you go on holiday? And they go, people watching. Because all you do is you sit there and you go, oh, God, look at that. Oh, my. And everybody's pretty much, if you're not doing that, you're an exceptional human being and good for you. You're amazing. But most people do. And we all kind of, we all make our judgment formed upon, I think, a lack of knowledge. Because we don't know what's going on with these people's lives. We don't know why they've become where they've become. We just sit and we judge and we post our anxieties, our isms upon them. And I think it's just part of certainly society today and the human condition. And I am as guilty as anybody of that.
Because I tend to be guilty. My wife will try and bring me down to earth and possibly even hit me a little bit if I do that too much.
But also, in as much as I... And listen, I'm not casting aspersions on your wife, but we're all great arbiters of you know, the stability of life and being kind of righteous and ethical and moralistic. But I bet when she's doing it, she's doing exactly the same as you, but it's just not, she's not doing it at that time at you. So it gives her another opportunity, A, to tell you off, correct you and have the moral high stance. So we're all the same. We all want to be better than we are. I guess. And we use other people as that barometer to gauge ourselves. I don't know why we do that, but I think that's what it's the hierarchy of the human psyche and the animalistic side of us that's the tribal.
Goodness me. Yeah, almost. That could be the third show we do.
But it's a long conversation. Yeah.
Yes. But for now, just bringing it back to right now, if people think, actually, you know, I could be suffering from this particular problem, or I'm worried about it, what do you suggest people to do to go for a bit more information to find out about it and then eventually kind of do something about it?
In any situation, I've always found, and obviously there's always exceptions to the rule, in any situation, a problem shared is a problem halved. And if you're dealing with any kind of anxiety, if you have a conversation with somebody, it just usually makes it better because you say it out loud and you have a response, even if it's only a sounding board. But in this case, I'd been into a situation where I was suffering physical pain because of my eyelids, nothing more than that. So I went to a doctor and then I went to a surgeon. And now it's alleviated. So every part of my journey from pain to no pain was conversation and then procedure to alleviate the problem that created the conversation. So just go and talk to somebody, whether it's a conversation of, am I dealing with something that is of my own creation, invention, or own psyche? Or is this something I need to think about? If you speak to somebody that cares, they're always going to give you a concerted, thoughtful response. But if you're speaking to a professional, certainly one that's ethical, he's going to give you a pragmatic and professional response. So, you know, converse. It's always the key to everything, I find.
Excellent. That sounds like perfect advice and a very good place to end it just for now. So many thanks for chatting, Sam.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you so much. And good luck with everything you do. It's been a pleasure.
Sam Kane, what a delightful chat. Really enjoyed talking to him. Thank you very much to him for taking the time to have a gossip. And thank you to you for listening. And have a healthy week until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week until next week.